Good morning. I'm Chuck Christensen, General Counsel of the San Diego Housing Commission. Chair Ertassen is not present today, and the board does not have a vice chair. So I'm going to take the reins here just to begin with until we elect a vice chair, and then turn it over to the vice chair to run the rest of the meeting. So before we get started, members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must fill a speaker form out. Each speaker is limited to 3 minutes. Collective testimony by those in support or opposed to a matter shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes per side. The non-agenda public comment are heard at the beginning of the meeting. In this case, it'll be right after the election of the vice chair. Those who wish to, and for non-agenda public comment, I need you to fill out a white form. For those who wish to address the, in support of a matter, need to fill out the goldenrod form, like this. And lastly, if you're opposed to a matter, we need the pink form. Members of the public may also request to have an item pulled from the consent agenda. If there is one, I don't believe there will be one today. To speak on a matter on the agenda, just submit the speaker forms as we've discussed. All right, having done that, we will now skip over non-agenda public comment, commissioner comments, and report by the president and CEO. Those will be handled after the vice chair is selected. So we'll now go to item 100, which is the election of the vice chair. I would, at this point, entertain nominations for vice chair.
I'd like to nominate Commissioner Benevuto. I think she's been on the commission. I consider her my senior, certainly for the time on the commission, and I'm unable to do so, and I think she'd be fantastic at it, so I'd like to nominate her.
Thank you very much. Any other nominations? Do I have a second? All right. Let's call the question then. All in favor? Any opposed? That motion carries unanimously. I'll now turn this meeting over to the Vice Chair, Benvenuto.
Thank you, Chuck, and thank you to my fellow commissioners. I guess there's no time like the present to start, so thanks for bearing with me in my first go in this role guiding this meeting. Looking forward to serving in this new capacity. So we'll begin with non-agenda public comment. We have two speakers submitted, and we'll start with Martha Welch.
Martha Welch, I broke the scandal of SSD for bribes and illegal Chinese. Now, the FBI, we know who got the checks and the address. FBI, the state, and the federal, they're so mad they lost money right now. Now, somebody in this room might have that bribes also, because all these rules we have in housing, AMI, property age, and 50 years. Now, Right now, we only build studios, one bedroom. We don't build two rooms or three bedrooms. We don't build that also. The FBI also, Bill Horn can't buy a cell phone anymore. He's on the list. His real name is William T. Horn. Right now, HUD is mad at you because of these bribes. They won't work with you. And that's how I broke the FBI, because Bill Horn embezzled all the HUD money years and years. That's how I opened the case. You don't have any HUD here because Bill Horn took all the money and he embezzled it. That's how I opened the case. That's how I opened it. Now, there's a plot also, Bill Horn, the Chinese in the senior housing. Now, this happened a long time ago. Now, San Diego, now somebody on the board is also that, and it's growing error now. I know this because they jumped over me when I was going to housing. That's why I know. I was on a list, and new people come, and they jumped over and got in the housing. And it's been a long time, and they don't pay rent. Also, because I also was the governor, I stopped their checks, SSD, Medi-Cal, food stamps. They all got that stuff because of calling and threats, like what goes on here. So this this is what goes on. You don't build the right thing also. We're so behind the ball in San Diego. We didn't build a lot of stuff. And everything we built, that's the studios in one bedroom. Cypress, Talman's Garden. They're all studios in one bedroom. Now, what's happened to the family? You showed a video one time of the family in one bedroom. That doesn't look right to me. So this is going on so long in San Diego. The federal is back, but they're so mad. They're back here in San Diego. Believe me, they are. They're so mad. This money went down the drain with these Chinese. And so they're back, and they're working with me. I tweet them every day what goes on. I tell them everything I know with San Diego. I'm not afraid. I was the border supervisor, and I told the same thing to them. They're bad people. They don't care. They don't work with you. The housing is, you always wanted housing, but there's no end. There's no housing for these people. There's no end. Just tents. There's no housing. There's really no housing. We're behind the ball. All we build is these expensive places that are saturated, and they're not full, and that's wrong with San Diego.
Thank you, Ms. Welch. And next, Joyce Inyata.
Good morning. Excuse me. I need to calm myself. It's been a bumpy morning trying to get here. I want to start with this quote. It comes out of the audit department, our City of San Diego audit department. The audit report, which was just done on the real estate assets department. And it's in the first page of either the staff report or the detail. Here's the quote. Local leaders have declared an affordable housing state of emergency and have described the issue as the single greatest threat to our region's economy. End of quote. So I'll just let that set with you. But if you haven't had a chance, be sure, it's about 100 pages, the audit report. So be sure and take a look at that, because I think this is a gem. The real estate, what is 1,600, I believe, properties? So I know you're your separate entity, but you're housing authority also. So please do what you can to take a look at that, and do try to read that audit committee report. Okay, the two other things I wanted to talk about today is, first of all, preservation. You know, as I've said here before, preservation, I think, is one of the key beginning points to really get this housing crisis solved. And I know it's bumpy because it's transition, and we're really waking up to how important preservation is. But still, I don't feel it's going well. It just seems like it's a little too bumpy for me. So I want to get more reports out of the Housing Commission, out of City San Diego, that says what you're doing for preservation. You know, just even little reports here and there. And so my question today on that is, do we have a preservation director hired yet? And so I hope somebody will answer that. Perhaps Mr. Gentry will. And then the last thing I wanted to say, ask you about, is the Island Inn Preservation Project. I'm wondering if somebody could tell me, please, when it's going to be coming before the Housing Authority in the City of San Diego. And I believe that that's the next step. But I would love to know a status report on that. If you don't have a date yet when it'll be on the agenda, I hope soon. But I would appreciate any information I could get on that. So usually I start out positive, but I'm not quite there yet. But I'll take a deep breath, because I want you to know that I appreciate all of you so, so much. And the new people, welcome aboard. And we have a quorum, I'm sure. But I welcome you aboard. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's tough work. I've never done what you do, but I know from an outside person, I can see how tough it is. So just hang in there. Please stay with it, because we want stability right now. We need stability, and we need hard work, and we need people really putting their shoulder to what's really happening here and making it move. So thank you for your time, and have a great day.
Thank you, and I think we can all say that the housing crisis right now is certainly frustrating all of us, and I appreciate that it takes us a second to find the positivity sometimes, and that's okay. We'll be moving on to commissioner comments, and I'm going to take this opportunity to bump my knee very hard against the table, but also recognize two commissioners that are leaving us today as we welcome two new faces. We'll start with welcoming Ryan Klumpner, a public policy and communications professional with his own consultancy business, who will undoubtedly bring us a new, fresh perspective and commitment to the commission's mission, as well as Johanna Hester, a labor leader who serves as Assistant Executive Director of the United Domestic Workers of America and the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Local 3930, both of whom we were very glad to find, very glad to have them confirmed by the City Council. But sadly, that does mean that we say goodbye to Commissioner Moraga and Commissioner Cerdy. So I'd like to spend a second to recognize them for their years of leadership and dedication to this agency and their years of service. We'll take a second and ask Commissioner Moraga, since he's here, to come forward so we can present them with a piece of gratitude from the commission. We should add, after 8 years of service, Commissioner Moraga chaired the Housing Commission's Strategic Plan Committee and served on the board's audit committee, as well as the board of directors of the Housing Development Department, Housing Development Partners, excuse me. Thank you. We'll miss you and wish you well. I hope you'll come back and visit us and provide some comments, feedback, crazy emails. We'll see. Unfortunately, Commissioner Cerdy couldn't join us this morning, but we do send her our gratitude and we'll be sending her her plaque. With that, I would like to see if Commissioner Klumpner, you have any comments you'd like to say?
Sure. I'm thrilled to be here. And as has already been said, I think three times this morning, I mean, this is the most critical issue facing our region and the state as a whole, really. And so I'm very happy to be a part of this process. And what I'm bringing to this is I really have sort of one objective here, which is anything I can do to help us figure out how to provide housing for the most people possible. I'm new, so there's a lot more to it than that. But, when I thought about this, that was sort of what it came down to as I was considering joining here. Is that's an incredible mission when you stop and think about it. And so I'm looking forward to working with all of you, and thank you.
Any other commissioner comments? Okay. With that, we'll turn to the report by the president and CEO.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I have a half a dozen very brief reports, if I could, please, mainly talking about significant occurrences since the time of the last board meeting. On September the 4th, the Housing Commission, joined by Mayor Faulkner and Councilmember Gomez, announced up to $50 million in availability for the development and rehabilitation of affordable rental housing units for low-income and homeless San Diegans. This includes $20 million through our Housing First San Diego Homelessness Initiative, the 3.0 part of that that was kicked off July of 2017. Another $20 million for the development of affordable rental housing for individuals and families who have low income, and another $10 million to be awarded to rehabilitate affordable housing, which can be termed under another word, preservation, Joy. So what we're doing is setting motion forward to utilize the resources we've collected over the past few years to engage in additional development going forward. These NOFAs, or the Notice of Fund Availability, are accessible on our vendor portal on Planet Biz, which is linked to our website. So I would encourage anybody listening or watching later, if they're interested, go to the website. That's the front end. Intermediate step, on September the 6th, we held a groundbreaking for the development called Paseo La Paz. This is one of the developments that we funded through the last affordable housing NOFA, and that property celebrated its groundbreaking last week. Councilmember Alvarez and Chairman Ertassin were among the speakers at this groundbreaking. This is a property that will provide some 137 new affordable housing apartments for low-income families in San Ysidro. And the Housing Commission's investment was $9.25 million, combination of HUD money from the feds and also from the city's Affordable Housing Fund, which we administer. We also issued $28.6 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds toward this development. This will be a great addition to the San Ysidro area of San Diego. Another matter, we were honored on August the 8th to have the HUD Deputy Secretary come visit with us, the lady sitting at the end of the table there you see. Her name is Pamela Patenude. She met with me, senior leadership, here at our offices to hear about our programs in affordable housing, rental assistance, and homelessness. And immediately after the meeting, she toured the award-winning historic Hotel Churchill and spoke with residents there. Ms. Patenude was very complimentary about this agency. I'll brag for just a minute about the San Diego model. We are recognized nationally as one of the more progressive organizations in this industry. Ms. Patenude, I've known for a long time. She was an assistant secretary during the George W. Bush administration. She's been the deputy secretary for about a year and a half with this administration and functionally runs the day-to-day activities of HUD and is an accomplished professional. So for Ms. Patenude to say good things about us, it means something. That was a nice visit. Also, paper here. I'm going to skip to an award that we just received as well last month, and this is a nice one. We have a lot of our folks here who get a lot of credit and glory for kicking off and dealing with and developing and accomplishing new properties. We also have a lot of folks down in the ranks who do the blocking and tackling for the people that get all the headlines. And one of our blocking and tackling departments is our procurement department. Our procurement department has received an Achievement of Excellence in Procurement Award from the National Procurement Institute. This is the second year in a row we've received this award. Now, that may sound not noteworthy, but it really and truly is, because these are the people. I see Deborah back there smiling at me. These are the people who make it possible for the rest of us to do our jobs and not get in trouble legally. They are hugely essential. And so, Deborah, I'd like for you and any of the other folks in your department are here with us today, please stand up and be recognized. This is wonderful. As I said, they don't ordinarily get a lot of attention, but they don't block for me. I hit the dirt and hit it hard. Thank you. In closing, Madam Chair, I'd like to also recognize one major change in structure of the organization, which notified you all by email about last month. As you know, Debbie Ruane is leaving the organization at the end of this month after 9.5 years here at the executive level. Debbie will be joining the meeting late this morning. She had another commitment, which kept her from being here when we opened up. We're going to miss Debbie terribly. She's been a wonderful key component of the turnaround of this organization, which we've accomplished over the 10 years since I've been here, since I was hired to come here. And Debbie's moving on. What we've done is to do some restructuring internally to provide for some upper mobility and some additional career opportunities for people already here. And we've been fortunate enough over the years to develop a great bench strength here, great backbenchers, if you will, who can move up and do additional higher-level work now. And I just want to call them out to you and have them stand as I recognize them, their names. Some of them you're going to recognize immediately. Jeff Davis, their Executive VP and Chief of Staff. Jeff, stand up, please, who is the one department head who survived 10 years with me. That should count for something. Three existing senior VPs, as of Zaina Valladolid. Zaina, please stand. Sukhet Dayal and Mike Pavko. They were already senior VPs working in their respective divisions. We've added three more who are promotions from the VP level. And let me introduce those to you as well. Joining Mike in real estate will be Emily Jacobs. Also, one of our newest senior hire who's been with us about a year running our homelessness programs, Lisa Jones. Lisa. And also our CFO, Chief Financial Officer, Money Lady, who is also is at this status now, Tracy McDermott. These are your senior leaders. Now, we've got a lot of other good folks among the 340 staff that are here. But these are your leaders. It's great bench strength, and whatever they say, I believe. So thank you, guys.
I'll hold the praise for Debbie until she's here and can be embarrassed by it. But welcome and congratulations to all those who are receiving promotions. I can say that being out in the community, working within City Hall and all that, I'm always so pleased to hear the frequent praise of each of you. So congratulations, and those of you who I don't know very well, I look forward to getting to know you better. We'll move on to approval of the minutes. Do we have a motion to approve? Any comments? Moved by Commissioner Walsh, seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passes. And Chuck, please reel me in if I start making up procedure. thanks. We've already handled election of vice chair. We'll move on to item 101, appointments to San Diego Housing Commission committees. Rick, I assume you're going to take that one? Or to just list them out?
Let me go ahead and address that one if I could briefly. We've had a number of standing committees with the agency for several years, and those meet infrequently but periodically to help provide subordinate advice to this board on policy positions that it takes. We've had with both Commissioners Surdy and Moraga leaving, we've had some openings. And also with the two newer board members, Hester and Klumpner, coming on board, it gave us the opportunity to do a little bit of reassignments internally and also to figure out where we could hopefully position the newer board members appropriately. And what's listed here under item number 101, for Audit Committee, Investment Committee, Real Estate Committee, and Strategic Plan Committee, what we tried to do was to balance those out as evenly as we could without overly burdening any of the board members or leaving any out entirely. So hopefully this meets with your pleasure. And, Madam Chair, I would be glad to entertain any conversation that you all might have or go straight to action. That's up to you.
Commissioners, any feedback, remarks? Do we have a motion? Great. Moved by Commissioner Hubbard, seconded by Commissioner Davis. We'll take it to a vote. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries.
If I could have one final comment, Madam Chair, I think that if you look at the juxtaposition of the board members here, one of the things that I think was good to do was to look toward the real estate committee, which can sometimes be the most complicated thing that we do. Throw the two newbies in there as a way to help provide for some quick education and feedback. Some discussions that I've had with both Chair Tassin and also with now Vice Chair Benvenuto, the strategic plan I see as having a particular significance over the next year or so. If you look at the 10 years since I've been here, what I was hired to do in 08, we pretty well accomplished by about 2012, 2013. 2013, the then board here, and I think there's been an entire turnover now since that time, engaged in a year to a year and a half, along with the entire staffing here, to do a strategic plan that you're going to hear a report on later today, that I think has laid out a set of significant accomplishments over the last 5 years. Well, now, particularly with the chair Tassin terming out early next year, we're going to have a significant turnover on this board over the past couple of years. That and the fact that the strategic plan, which was adopted 5 years ago and has been updated every year, may have run its course. I see the next year one of significant planning effort by this board and the staff together. And so I think that will help set the stage for you all for the next iteration of your terms on the board. So I just wanted to point that out, and I think that we look forward to working with the new board and to providing you all the support that you need from us. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, and I think you're right. The commission has demonstrated an immense amount of agility in responding to new expectations, a changing set of issues. So revisiting the strategic plan sounds smart, and I am looking forward to the presentation later today. We'll move on to item 102, which is the appointment of board members to the Housing Development Partners and HDP Mason Housing Corporation. I think that we've probably covered most of the appointment process. So if we have a motion. Great. Moved by Commissioner Davis. Seconded by Commissioner Hubbard. All in favor? Great. Any opposed? No. Motion carries. And with that, we will take it to item 103, La Jolla Marine Apartments, and I believe speakers. Great.
Good morning, Madam Vice Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen. My name is Tom Mudd. I'm the Director of Development Services serving the Housing Commission. Next to me is Mr. Mike Pavko, Senior Vice President of our real estate team. First, and on behalf of our department, I'd like to welcome the new commissioners and thank you for your service to the City of San Diego. Let's get started. Today, staff is recommending and requesting action on the four following items for the La Jolla Marine Apartments. First, authorize the President and CEO to enter into a design-build contract and all subsequent or associated contracts using competitive procurement methodologies. Second, approve the total development plan and ratification of the budget not to exceed $1.35 million. Three, authorize the President and CEO to substitute the identified funding sources with other available funds. And finally, authorize the President and CEO to execute all instruments and documents necessary to appropriate to process these approvals. In May 2005, SDHC assumed the rights and responsibilities of the City of San Diego's ground lease and ownership of the 8 townhomes. In January 2018, San Diego Housing Commission acquired the land from the City of San Diego for a total sum of $100. The La Jolla Marine property is a total of 8 townhome-style affordable apartments located on Cuvier Street in La Jolla. I hope I pronounced that correctly. The project was built in 1977 and consists of 4 three-bedroom townhomes and 4 four-bedroom townhomes. Since completion of original construction, no apparent significant upgrades have been completed, and to modernize and reset the clock, if you will, on these structures, the summary of proposed work is as follows. Comprehensive interior rehabilitation, including slab repair, removal of acoustic ceiling, all new low-flow plumbing fixtures, all new energy-efficient electrical fixtures, all new cabinetry and countertops, new energy-efficient appliances, and new flooring and wall finishes. Let's move to the exterior. Exterior rehabilitation shall include new entry and utility doors, new roofing system and fascia replacement, stucco repair and complete repaint, drought-tolerant landscape and irrigation upgrades, stripe and seal of parking lot, and building and site signage. There's also a detached freestanding structure containing 8 storage closets and also 1 laundry room. The structure will receive the same upgrades that we've mentioned prior. Staff anticipates completion of this work by June of 2019. Project funding source is all local funding. Again, staff is recommending the approval of the action items in front of you and to complete the comprehensive renovation of the La Jolla Marine Apartments. Again, thank you, and we'll move on to questions.
Great. Thank you. Commissioners, any questions?
Very quickly, the report discusses relocation considerations. Would you mind just sharing those with us publicly so we can hear?
Yeah, we anticipate that the folks there will be temporarily relocated for 45 days per structure. And since this is a design-build project, we haven't determined yet whether we're going to do 1 or 2 phases. But again, maximum duration would be 45 days. And also, we have a budget for professional relocation included in this.
Thank you. Did that answer your question? Wonderful. Great.
How large are each of the units?
Approximately 1,100 square feet.
Bedroom-wise?
There are 4 three-bedroom units and 4 four-bedroom units. No studios.
That is great. Any other questions? Okay. Do we have a motion? Moved by Commissioner Davis. Seconded by Commissioner Walsh. Discussion? Okay. All in favor? Wonderful. Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next up, item 104, which is the FY19 Rapid Rehousing Program.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Jeff Davis, Executive Vice President and Chief of Staff, and with me is Lisa Jones, our Senior Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations. This morning, we are requesting approval to sole source available federal and City of San Diego funds to People Assisting the Homeless, also known as PATH, to operate rapid rehousing programs. Rapid rehousing provides short to long-term rental assistance along with case management services to promote housing stability and reduce the amount of time an individual or a family experiences homelessness. PATH operates multiple homeless service programs within the city and county of San Diego, including interim shelter, rapid rehousing, case management, and outreach programs such as whole person wellness and health to home, and an array of supportive services through their PATH Connections Depot. In previous solicitations, PATH was one of only 2 providers originally awarded emergency solution grant funding for rapid rehousing. And PATH has been operating their rapid rehousing program with these funds since 2014. And in fiscal year 2018, PATH exceeded their goal for housing persons experiencing homelessness. They have shown consistent focus on providing compassionate and quality services to the clients they serve.
As a current rapid rehousing provider, PATH will be able to quickly bring its program to scale and start serving additional families immediately. With the combined funding of $456,749, PATH will be able to permanently house 58 households with their rapid rehousing programs in fiscal year 2019. The Emergency Solutions Grant and Continuum of Care funds are not new funding. They are available because a previous provider surrendered their participation in rapid rehousing programs that received these federal funds administered by the Housing Commission. The funding from the City's Affordable Housing Fund was approved for rapid rehousing activities in the fiscal year 2019 budget and is being allocated to PATH for that purpose. This funding will help support the salary of a full-time housing specialist to assist participants to access housing opportunities. Approving this action will authorize San Diego Housing Commission to expend $198,736 in Continuum of Care funds, $239,000 in Emergency Solution Grant funds, and $19,013 from the Affordable Housing Fund, or a total expenditure of $456,749 in fiscal year 2019. Okay, I think our slides aren't moving. I'm going to go ahead and proceed. Today, we are asking the Housing Commission Board to take the following actions. Authorize the execution of an amendment to the agreement with PATH to increase their Emergency Solutions Grant award by $50,000, bringing the full agreement amount to $239,000 for the term of July 1, 2018 to June 30, 2019. Authorize a new agreement with PATH to award $198,763 of Continuum of Care funds to their Rapid Rehousing Program for the term of September 15, 2018 to February 28, 2019, with an option for a four-month extension to June 30, 2019, bringing this contract in line with the majority of our other contracts, and approve a further additional one-year option to extend to June 30, 2020. Authorize the execution of an agreement with PATH in the amount of $19,013 of affordable housing funds to support a housing specialist position that will exclusively work with PATH rapid rehousing programs, and authorize the president and CEO or designee to execute all necessary documents and instruments to implement these approvals in a form and format approved by general counsel, and to substitute funding sources and or increase compensation by not more than 20% of the total agreement amount for the proposed agreement without further action by the Board of Commissioners. This concludes our presentation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Commissioner Davis.
Have you noticed how are we doing as far as the people that are needed, the homeless and the ones that need quick relocation? Is it still growing, or is it staying about the same or getting better?
So overall, based on the 2018 point in time count, the number of persons experiencing homelessness has remained somewhat stable, not a significant change, but the number of unsheltered persons has increased. Mm-hmm. So for the city of San Diego, we're at about 5,000 total homeless, about 2,600 that remain unsheltered. So the need is definitely there, particularly for families. So permanent supportive housing, which is a housing resource that's a permanent ongoing subsidy, there's not a lot of permanent supportive housing for families. There's more rapid rehousing for families. So rapid rehousing is a key component to helping families experiencing homelessness get off the streets.
Thank you.
Commissioner Klubner.
Thank you. With regards to the funds that were surrendered by the previous provider, do we know why that happened?
The previous provider was Interfaith Shelter Network, so they have spent a lot of their focus and energies over the years on shelter and sort of more emergency services, and I think they're mostly redirecting their energies towards that.
Thank you. Any other questions? I'd like to just point out again, this isn't new funding. We're just shifting existing funding around to a provider that's already done an exemplary job, so that is great. And this is one of the many prongs of our approach. So I think it's really important that we're keeping that in mind, that preventing people from hitting the street and ending up homeless is far a better use of our funds, often a little bit more of a better stewardship there. So I am glad to see this coming forth. Do we have a motion? Moved by Commissioner Davis. Seconded by Commissioner Walsh. I got a nod before I heard. Okay. All in favor? Great. Any opposed? Wonderful. Motion carries. Thank you. And next is item 105, the City of San Diego Temporary Bridge Shelter Program's 9-month operating agreements. We do have one speaker for public comment, but we'll, is it this you guys again? Wonderful.
Good morning. Jeff Davis with Lisa Jones. This morning we are requesting that this board recommend that the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego approve the second option to to extend the Temporary Bridge Shelter Program agreements through June 30th, 2019. We will also be providing a summary of the changes included in the revised operating agreement. Last November, the Housing Commission Board, Housing Authority, and City Council authorized a memorandum of understanding between the City and the Housing Commission for the oversight of the administration of the temporary bridge shelters. In addition, agreements for the operations of the three shelters were authorized for an initial period of December 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2018. The shelters opened at three sites within the city with the goal of addressing homelessness and combating the regional hepatitis A outbreak. In May, the MOU was extended for a one-year term, July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019, and the operating agreements were renewed for 3 months through September 30th, 2018. The Temporary Bridge Shelter Program has piloted innovative approaches to increased shelter impact and incorporate housing-focused services. In addition, the bridge shelters have elevated discussions regarding the development of a regional homeless crisis response system and the need for system-level coordination. As with any new program, the assumptions and expectations at inception typically do require adjustments based on the circumstances that become apparent through the operation of the program. In addition to the need to continue to refine the bridge shelter program, the original contract agreements provided that a third-party evaluation of the shelters would start in their fourth operating month. The goal of the initial phase of the evaluation was to ensure that the bridge shelter program design, expectations, and contractual requirements align to foster positive housing outcomes and increase community-wide impact. The goal of the second phase was to ensure that the operations at the individual bridge shelters are in alignment with the principles of Housing First and maintain fidelity to the bridge shelter model. Focus Strategies was selected through a competitive bid process to conduct that evaluation. The findings of the third-party assessment and associated recommendations were presented to this board on July 13, 2018, and to the City Council Select Committee on Homelessness on June 18, and to the full City Council on July 31st. In addition to identifying opportunities to improve the bridge shelter service model, the consultant's analysis highlighted several areas in which the program is excelling. The report praises the shelter utilization of best practices, including a housing-first approach with low barrier of entry that provides client-focused services. The bridge shelter were also recognized for their system-level coordination, which provides their clients with a service-rich environment, and through the use of the region's coordinated entry system, helps provide shelter for individuals who are in greater need. The ongoing collection of demographic and performance data, in addition to the third-party analysis recommendations, will continue to facilitate program optimization as we continue to refine the bridge shelter service model. Leveraging technical assistance resources provided by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has been a valued resource that will continue to assist with the implementation of best practices, particularly in regard to enhancing training resources for housing-focused shelter and coordinated outreach and engagement. Focus Strategies provided recommendations to both measure and improve the performance of the temporary bridge shelters. While some of the action items can be addressed administratively, others require additional expenditures in order to be implemented. As outlined in the analysis, the population that is being served in the bridge shelters has higher needs than initial assumptions indicated, and as such, a greater level of case management and housing stabilization positions are needed to maximize opportunities to connect these individuals to a variety of housing interventions. Lisa will now walk you through the recommendations and of the operator agreements and the July operating month activities.
This slide summarizes the proposed staffing model changes at each temporary bridge shelter, in addition to the associated cost and the net budget impact. The housing navigator positions at each facility will be eliminated and replaced with housing specialist case manager, and supervising case manager positions. Alpha Project will increase staff by 5 full-time employees, which will provide a supportive services team composed of 10 case managers and 5 housing specialists. Veterans Village of San Diego will increase staff by 6 full-time employees, which will provide a supportive services team composed of 6 case managers and 3 housing specialists, with the remaining positions designated for 2 additional security guards. Father Joe's Villages will increase staff by 3 full-time employees, which will provide a supportive service team composed of 5 case managers and 1 housing specialist, with additional housing specialist services being leveraged with existing Father Joe's staff that also serve other projects. In summary, staffing levels across the 3 bridge shelters will increase by 14 full-time employees, which will augment the 18 repurposed housing navigator positions. The initial projected 9-month operations budget for the 3 shelters was $7.5 million, with updated costs needed to support the new staffing model. The new projected 9-month budget is $8,482,756, a net budget increase of $982,756. In addition to the provision of a higher degree of case management and housing stabilization positions, several other changes have been incorporated into the draft operating agreements. The third-party evaluation's recommendation to adjust the program goal for successful housing exits to an interim goal of 30% has been incorporated into the program expectations in the proposed agreements. This goal would apply to program participants who remain in a temporary bridge shelter for 30 days or longer. The temporary bridge shelter programs have helped us learn a great deal about the homeless population and the response system within our region. We anticipate continuing to learn much more, which will inform goals and expectations as we move forward. The updated agreements also include additional requirements related to type and frequency of training, which at a minimum will include prevention and diversion, trauma-informed care, motivational interviewing, harm reduction, and operating a housing-focused shelter environment. The operators will also be required to participate in a follow-up third-party evaluation to determine if the changes to the scope of work have been fully implemented, as well as to identify the impact those implementations have on both client services and exits to permanent and longer-term housing. The time required for the operators to recruit and onboard staff and implement the changes in the agreements will impact the timing of the evaluation in order to obtain the most meaningful analysis. Language has also been included in the Father Joe's Villages operating contract to facilitate the wind down of operations as a result of the anticipated development of several hundred permanent supportive housing units where the families and single women shelter is currently located. The City of San Diego is actively looking for a new location for the shelter for families and single women. Several provisions have been incorporated into the draft operating agreements that are contingent upon feasibility and will be implemented when and if the activities are determined feasible and funding is determined to be available for their purpose. The utilization of a flexible funding pool to support housing exits was identified as a recommendation in the third-party assessment conducted by Focus Strategies, and staff are currently exploring potential sources of funding, including state funding, to meet this need. In addition, city staff is determining the feasibility of transferring the responsibility of the various vendor contracts that provide on-site facility services, such as laundry, toilet, and washing facilities, directly to each respective operator. And the City and San Diego Housing Commission staff are exploring the feasibility of increasing the total number of beds at the temporary bridge shelter operated by Veterans Village of San Diego from 200 to 250 to provide space to serve non-veterans. The temporary bridge shelters offer a safe, centralized location for individuals and families experiencing homelessness to receive temporary housing and appropriate supportive services needed to expedite placement into permanent or longer-term housing options. Since operations began, the 3 bridge shelters have served 2,521 unique clients, of which only 122 were classified as priority level 1 at shelter entry. Priority Level 1 clients have a score from the assessment tool known as the Vulnerability Index Service Prioritization Decision Assistance Tool, or VI-SPDAT, and have been matched to a housing subsidy and are looking for a permanent housing unit. As intended, the bridge shelters are reaching out to and serving the most vulnerable San Diegans. Of the population served since the opening of the shelters, 55% across all 3 bridge shelters entered the shelters with no income. 56% had a physical disability, 48% were chronically homeless, and 35% were 55 years of age or older. The occupancy rates at the three shelters remain high. On July 31st, 2018, the occupancy rate at the single adult shelter was 99%. The occupancy rate at the veterans shelter was 90%. And the occupancy rate at the shelter for families with children and single women was 97%. There were 40 exits to permanent housing and 11 exits to longer-term housing in July 2018. Since shelter opening, there have been 332 positive housing exits, which includes 242 exits to permanent housing and 90 exits to longer-term housing. The Bridge Shelter outreach teams coordinate street-based outreach across all 9 council districts, as well as engaging with the San Diego Police Department Homeless Outreach Team, the Storage Connect Center Outreach Team, and other street-based outreach teams within the city. In the month of July, the Bridge Shelter outreach teams had a total of 1,243 engagements, which included 829 interviews and 414 visual observations. A visual observation includes persons identified as likely to be homeless but declined to engage in interviews or were non-responsive or inaccessible, for instance, in a canyon or an area that the outreach teams could not reach. 50% of the engagements occurred in District 3, 21% occurred in District 8, 11% occurred in District 2, 8% occurred in District 9, and the remaining 10% were spread across the 5 other districts. The engagements in July resulted in 73 shelter placements, 482 shelter referrals, 2 placements into substance abuse treatment, 100 referrals to medical services, 22 referrals to mental health services, 16 referrals to substance abuse treatment, and also 630 basic services provided, including water, hygiene kits, blankets, clothing, and transportation assistance. The initial fiscal year 2018 operating expenditures closed out at $1,993,635 under budget. This included initial startup and monthly operating costs. The savings realized in the initial operating term have been repurposed to support the 2018 and 2019 operating costs for the Storage Connect Center as approved by the Housing Authority Resolution number HA-1777. This slide provides a summary of the funding source and associated costs to exercise the second option of the operating agreements with each service provider for a 9-month term from October 1, 2018 through June 30, 2019. As in previous funding allocations, the Housing Commission Property Reserves Fund is the source of funding for the 3 agreements, which total $8,482,756 and SDHC administration costs of $138,000. The City of San Diego has committed to replenish Housing Commission funds expended for the temporary bridge shelters and the Storage Connect Center. Thus far, the City directed $5.5 million toward the development of San Ysidro Village Senior Apartments. The Housing Commission will fund approximately $800,000 towards this development. The City's funds are reimbursement for $6.5 million the Housing Commission budgeted in fiscal year 2018 for operations of the City's temporary bridge shelters. In addition, the Housing Commission will receive from the City $10 million in community development block grant funds and $2 million in low and moderate income housing asset funds toward the expenses the Housing Commission budgeted in fiscal year 2019 for the temporary bridge shelters and the Storage Connect Center. The $10 million in CDBG funds is a source of funds for the notice of funding availability for the rehabilitation of affordable rental housing units that the Housing Commission released on September 4th. Today, we're in the home stretch. Today, we are requesting that the board recommend authorization to execute the second option to renew agreements with Alpha Project, Veterans Village of San Diego, and Father Joe's Villages for the operation of the city's temporary bridge shelters in the amount of $8,482,756. The renewal term is for a 9-month period from October 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019. And we also request authorization for the San Diego Housing Commission's President and Chief Executive Officer, or designee, to execute all necessary documents and instruments to implement these approvals in a form approved by General Counsel. To increase compensation to Alpha Project, VBSD, and FJV to provide for flexible spending subsidies to help clients secure housing exits without further action by the Board of Commissioners through allocated state grant funding for grant-eligible activities, to increase compensation to Alpha Project, VBSD, and FJV to allow each service provider to assume responsibility for facility support at the shelters without further action by the Board of Commissioners, to increase compensation to VVSD to increase the total number of beds available to 250 and open the shelter to non-veterans if the expansion is determined to be appropriate and achievable without further action by the Board of Commissioners, and to substitute funding sources and or increase compensation by not more than 10% of the total compensation of the total agreement amount without further action by the San Diego Housing Commission Board or Housing Authority. That concludes our presentation. We're available for any questions.
Thank you. I actually want to start out with a few questions. In the previous presentation we had around the bridge, temporary bridge structures, we talked about the need for higher certifications of staff there. I wondered if you could elaborate a little bit more on how you anticipate that impacting outcomes and what you're doing to include that in the language.
Great question. So, yes, that's where we are eliminating the 18 housing navigator positions and bringing in both case management and housing specialist positions. So one of the things we've learned when we talked about how highly vulnerable the population is, the original concept around the bridge shelters was that the people that would be coming in would already be matched to a housing resource, which means they're matched to another service provider and a case manager. So those case management resources that we thought would be from an external source were not built into the program model. So building in case managers, the idea is that we have an ability to better engage with clients, have those kind of higher level conversations that a housing navigator that is really focused on getting people document ready doesn't have the same skill set for. So increased stabilization, have those higher level conversations, have experience in crisis de-escalation, experience in dealing with mental health issues, and have those that ability to have those clients engage in a way that they're not now. So even some of the clients that are the most highly vulnerable in the shelters, we're still seeing exit back out to unknown places. So we want to slow those exits down, give the operators the resources to have those case management conversations, build housing stability plans. So whether it's a housing stability plan towards a coordinated entry system resource, because that's the most appropriate, or the likelihood that maybe they're going to be waiting a long time for that, look at other options, whether it's residential treatment facilities, whether it's long-term nursing care, which we've seen because we have an aging population there, whether it's exits through roommate sharing or family reunification, build those housing stability plans. The housing specialists then come in and help those clients access and action those activities. So they help them work through the list of the activities on their housing stability plan, get them document ready, get them connected to benefits, maybe even refer to job centers if that's the appropriate action, look at roommate sharing, family reunification, and other interventions to exit the shelters.
Thank you. So this is starting to look a little bit more like a wraparound service within the tent.
Yes.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And given the smaller than expected number of Priority 1 clients coming through, do we have an idea, it may be asking for us to compare apples and oranges, but do we have an idea how long it takes that population to move through the tent and find permanent housing? Is there any data on that population alone that we could maybe use as a guidepost?
That's a great question. So the average length of stay that was built into the contract is 120 days. That was with the assumption that based on sort of the length of time when someone's searching for a unit or accessing a unit can run 90 to 120 days. So that was why that was originally built in the way it was. When they are well engaged and they're connected and they're getting the service they need, I'd say average length of stay is between 90 to 120 days. For persons that are not likely to exit through CES, that's data that we still need to learn.
Okay, fair enough. And then could you elaborate more on the evolution of the Father Joe's Villages plan, how secure we are in that, and if that were to come to pass, what our total makeup would be then on as far as possible temporary placements? Because is that temporary, or would that be permanent units that they would be establishing there?
So I'm not an expert in this area, so we might have other people who are working on it, but my understanding is it's about 430 units are planned on that site, I think about 270 of which are expected to be affordable housing, permanent supportive housing units, and Rick might have better numbers than I do, but that's our understanding. So they're still working on the financing that. They're a long way along the path on that, but they're not complete.
Okay, great.
That particular property has received commitments from this agency, this organization, as I recall, between $11 and $12 million. So it's a large commitment from us. It's a large property. Deacon Vargas and the rest of his cohort are putting together the rest of the financing plan. As I recall, this financing plan is going to have about 11 or 12 different elements to it, all the money layered in. And they're specifically waiting right now for is either two or three state funding sources to fall in place that are, quote, authorized, but one of them's tied up in a state program tied up in a lawsuit from last year. So our thinking is that the money will flow or we would not have made our own commitments. We think the Father Joe's has already backed off when they think that they will need the property back to about a year from now, to late 2019. And I think that's probably optimistic as well. I think that this will be here through this fiscal year to June 30th and perhaps another.
Thank you. That's helpful. And my final question, and I'll turn it over, is we gave a review of the city reimbursements. Could you possibly slow that one down for me and then break it down on when, what chunk of money is coming and when? It sounds like maybe some of it was already committed for the San Ysidro, but past that, I was doing math and I came up with something that did not make sense.
Sure. So I can tell you, generally speaking, that we are actually ahead of schedule with the city reimbursing funds for the expenditures we've had for the bridge shelters. But I know you're asking for specifics, and so I'm going to have to ask our CFO, Tracy McDermott, to come up and talk about what funds have come in, what have been committed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry. So the funding we've received so far to make us whole for the bridge shelters is the 5.5 that was funded in July, $10 million of CDBG, which will fund our NOFA for the rehabilitation, and then we have another $2 million that's supposed to come in to make us whole for 2018. And then what that will leave us, if you approve this action, they'll still have to come up with another million. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. That is it. That's very helpful. I appreciate it. Okay. Commissioners, any other questions? Klumpner?
You just covered half my questions. Thank you. I was going to ask for a pause on the breakdown of the backfill as well, but I think I'm pretty clear on that. One thing that I'm not entirely clear on is it seems like this backfilling is put together as we go year by year, if I'm understanding this correctly. So this is maybe a question for the Strategic Planning Committee, but I'm curious how we're looking at this in terms of the strategic plan going forward, both in terms of whether we're going to assume that this is an ongoing activity, and then how we are going to, is there just going to be an assumption that each year CDBG funds, et cetera, will come together in the right proportions?
Sir, so far, I think the operative term is we've been operating on faith more than belief on this one. If you go back to a year ago, it's been almost exactly a year since the public health crisis over hepatitis A was declared in San Diego. I believe it was early September last year. There was at that point a great regrouping to figure out what to do. And I think it's fair to say over the last year, there is an often overused metaphor that does apply accurately in this case. And that is what we're trying to do is change the engines on the plane while we're still flying at 30,000 feet. Provide good services and not crash. And I think if you look at, that means our planning has been almost like, you heard the word design build used by Tom Mudd a while ago on a physical property. We're almost design building this one from a social services standpoint as we go. I'm very pleased that we're within a million, frankly, on getting reimbursed over the last year. Going forward, I think that one of the things that would help staff and me in particular, CEO, would be for this board to engage in some planning and some clear direction setting. You know, there's an old phrase by, it was one of John Lennon's songs, that life is what happens while we're making other plans. And I think that what happened with the Hep A outbreak a year ago was something happened nobody had planned for. and the entire city regrouped to deal with it. And the Housing Commission, I'm proud to say, stepped up and did, I think, his part in an appropriate fashion. Well, that was then. This is now. We're past that crisis. Now, I think, to use another metaphor, now that we've gotten some of the crocodiles out of the way, some of the alligators, now how do we drain the swamp? And I think we need to do some, consider strategic planning on doing that, looking for resources going forward, and I have every faith in the world we can do it. But I couldn't tell you right now exactly how that's going to happen. I think probably a year or two of planning will help set the stage for 5 to 10 years of concerted action. And I think those are the terms we need to think in addressing this problem.
That's very helpful. And I do want to, I skipped over a couple of points. I'm very impressed with the adaptation that's happening on this and all the points at which you mentioned the things that we're learning. And, you know, it would have been an incredible feat if this had started and just immediately hit everything that it was intended to do, and we had anticipated everything that was going to happen. And so the fact that these adjustments are occurring and that it's taking more of this wraparound approach is very impressive. I'm still not quite sure how to wrap my head around the long-term strategic planning, and I appreciate the frankness that that's something for us to consider. Do you want to add something? Okay. So this is all very helpful. Again, I'm new here, so bear with me for just a second. I just have a question about the property reserve funds that are being used in the interim as the additional funding comes back in. Is there any impact from those funds being set aside as we wait for the backfill? And just help me understand what those funds would normally be used for if it were not for this.
The property reserves that we have already spent for the shelters would have gone into ANOFA for the development of affordable housing or potentially permanent supportive housing. However, as Tracy mentioned, we did receive a commitment for $10 million of CDBG funds, and those funds were committed and actually announced last week as part of ANOFA for affordable housing development. So the money that we have spent would have been used for what we ended up using the reimbursement money for.
And just to be clear, we don't think that those CDBG funds would have arrived anyways, were it not for this. Is that...
I'm going to ask Tracy to...
I think that one, that's not an accounting question, not a financial question. That's a management question. The problem is we don't have enough resources to do everything we need to do. So the issue is what gets shorted to do something else. And Mr. Klumner, the argument that this money could better be used for permanent supportive housing, it's a good argument. There's another good argument, well, what do you do in the meantime with people dying on the streets? It's a good argument. What happens when you have two good arguments and they're in contradiction to each other and you can't do both? I think that the only answer to all this is the answer, yes. This is a dilemma to which there is no resolution in a arithmetic setting. It's more... I had one math course since high school, so I don't know how to put this in math terms, Tracy. But I think the issue here is how do we use limited resources when we have a greater need than we have resources to deal with? And there's never a good answer to that. So that's why I think it would help this organization to do some considered strategic planning so that if something like this happens again where there are multiple demands on the same source of money, we can make a more considered decision on how to use that limited money. As it is now, we're frankly always wrong because however we use the money, something is left out. And if you ask the question in a limited fashion, does this get left out? Well, of course it does. And would we have gotten the CDBG money to do housing with anyway? Maybe. I don't know what the city's plans were going to be. Might have been used for something else. But I think the issue is how do we use limited resources where we're not going to be able to do everything that's on our plate. particularly given the lack of a bond measure coming up in November, which hurts.
Thank you. And I do want to be clear. I support reauthorizing here. I think this is an incredibly important priority. And, you know, I fully understand the issue of whatever action is taken can be viewed as the wrong action, depending on, you know, sort of what perspective you want to take on it. But, I mean, it seems very clear to me that the issue here is one of the strategic plan and that these things couldn't have been anticipated, but the shelter has to stay open. It just seems like there is no alternative. So I do just want to be clear, you know, given that this is my first meeting, the intent of my questions is simply to, you know, try to get a finer point on exactly what the trade-offs are. And specifically, I fully understand the issue that there is simply not enough funding for these issues. And I think the degree to which, you know, at least I and hopefully everyone else can understand exactly what the shortfalls are and what the impacts of those are, it's helpful in making the case for, you know, why we need additional revenue.
I paused on answering your question because I just wasn't completely certain, but I thought I knew the answer, and Tracy confirmed it for me. We were very unlikely to receive that money had it not been for needing to reimburse us.
So that could be, it'd be fair to view that as a change in priorities at the city level towards this issue. I mean, that's really what I was sort of curious about is there a change in priorities to address this? At the level above the commission, or are we just shifting things within the same priority set? But it seems like that's a fairly clear answer.
Yes, there's definitely been a shift both at the city level and with council members.
I want to be brief, but in my time on the commission, which hasn't been extensive, and tried to make it impactful, I've seen that the challenges faced by the commission, that the commission at the direction of the housing authority and the mayor, and that the commission in its own, I would say, desire to be a positive attribute in some serious challenges this city faced, challenges that were not necessarily designed under the commission's initial umbrella. There were challenges that the commission said someone needs to help to address, and we will try, right? And so in my time, I saw that, and the initial challenges were, frankly, health crises. And when you have a sick patient, you triage and address. And I watched the commission do that and say, what is the worst problem? What is the life-threatening issue? And I will address it. I will put, right, a tourniquet on the bleeding aspects and worry about some of the other minor health problems later. And in doing that, the commission also said, and I will gather the data that's missing to understand how to strategically plan and to figure out how long-term we can keep this patient healthy and well, right? I'm working on this metaphor pretty hard here. So we are now, again, in my short time, have moved down that journey of where we have evaluated and reevaluated, made some changes in our plan, and are able to then come to exactly what I think Commissioner Klumpner is addressing, which is, what do we need to do this well? And it is very clear it is not an issue of resource allocation, but is an issue of additional resource acquisition. The problem is greater than the funds that have been allocated historically. And that's just not a San Diego problem. That's a much bigger problem than San Diego. And so that's what I've seen, at least from my simple mind. And so I think you're right. That strategic planning, my hope, newly appointed to that committee, is that we will spend a great deal of time saying, where do we get the additional revenue to do what we need to do? Because there's no one else. This is it. This is us guiding the housing authority. This is the staff to address this problem that most major cities are undertaking. And lucky for us, but also unlucky, we're the tip of the spear on this. And so we are designing a path one brick at a time, a path that no one has really paved. And so we're blessed to be able to do it, but I think our challenge is going to be, how are we going to fund this path? And that's my view of it. Thanks for letting me share it.
I think it's also fair to say that the whole homelessness arena does not fit within the parameters or responsibilities of any one organization. This organization, the Housing Commission, up until 2010, didn't touch the issue at all until Mayor Sanders asked us to come in to oversee the winter shelter. We made a major step into this arena as a result of some strategic planning and the board embracing this arena with our Housing First San Diego plan that we put on the street on November the 12th, 2014. And we're going to have over 800 units of permanent supportive housing being completed between 2 months ago when the first two properties hit and about a year from now. That would not be here now, and we can get you that list of properties that wouldn't be here had we not staked ourselves out 4 years ago following some planning 5 to 6 years ago. So what we're doing now is a result of some policy groundwork that was done back then, and I think it is time to revisit that. I'll point out in addition, and part of that is this agency finding its role within the whole homelessness umbrella. There's nobody here that's a homelessness czar, and this is not entirely our business, but it's a part of what we do, and it has turned out to be that. Another issue, in addition to inadequate funding that we've been faced with over the last year, and it's been very stark in the way it's slapped us in the face, is inadequate data. As you've heard, we have relied on data that was developed by the Regional Task Force on the Homeless, which itself got revamped, reconfigured about a year and a half ago. It is not now at all what it used to be. The data that the RTFH had on the homeless, the characteristics of the homeless population, was way out of date and was frankly inaccurate. It showed a lot of folks, to put in my basic North Carolina way of understanding things, a lot of folks who did not need that much help waiting for a little bit of help who could immediately succeed. As it turned out, when we saw the real population that the data did not reflect, those people didn't need us. That's one big reason the Housing Commission a year ago, when we got into the shelters, asked not to do any metrics until we figured out what we were doing. Well, we did the metrics anyway, and they turned out to be wrong because the data was wrong. So what we're doing now is revamping those metrics based on the real world we're in. And the real world we're in is a population that has greater needs than will lend themselves to easy solutions. And it's going to take a while. And to put it in real basic terms, I think that's what we're facing going forward.
I jumped in at the deep end and skipped right over one of my smaller questions. you mentioned when you were talking about the changes in staffing that part of the objective here is, I think the term we used was, you know, slowdown of people exiting into unknown places. And I think that makes perfect sense. But as I was looking through the report, the capacity looks like it is averaging somewhere between 90% and 99%. And so as I was trying to mesh those things, I just wanted to be sure that, do we know that if the slowdown that we're aiming for were to occur, if the people that are exiting in that fashion were to stay for the period of time that we think they need to, do we still have the capacity for that, or do we run into a capacity ceiling?
So what that would mean is that our average length of stay would increase. So our average length of stay for people who are staying right now is 85 days. Our average length of stay for people who are exiting is 58 days. I did check to make sure that I didn't just transpose those numbers. It's kind of odd. But what we're hoping is that what that means is we're going to serve less people over time. So in a 120-day period, maybe we're serving 800 people instead of 1,000 or 1,200. So one of the things as far as capacity is that for the most part, when you look at the family shelter, they may be at 97%, but they're essentially full. And that means that they've got a couple of upper bunks that they can't fill because they don't have a family member to fit on them. And they kind of have singles and families separated. For the Alpha Project, it's always full. So 99% for them is 323 people out of 324. Veterans Village of San Diego, we see more fluctuation there because the veterans have benefits, and sometimes when they get their benefits at the beginning of the month, they exit for a week or two and then come back. So what it will mean when we say we've served 2,521 people in the first 8 months of operating is that we will serve less people in the future months, but we'll serve them better, and we'll hopefully exit them to permanent or longer-term housing solutions so they're not re-entering the system again and again. So we may serve less people overall in the same length of time, but we'll have more success for the people we serve. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so I mean, it sounds like the goal is essentially that we're making a dent in the larger problem. Mm-hmm. That there will be a smaller, if this is working properly, there will be a smaller pool of people in need of the service, and therefore the standard of the service we're aiming for can rise.
Over time, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. We clearly have an immense learning curve, tackling it one bit at a time. We do have a speaker request, and possibly fittingly. Oh, I'm so sorry, Commissioner Davis. Absolutely.
Okay. I've been patient. This is a relatively simple one, I think, but I know I'm very proud of the Housing Commission for their support of this program. I think the bridge shelters are very important, and I'm excited about what they're doing for the community. One question, I noticed that you increased the staff in security, and I was curious, I'm really interested in the health and safety, especially of the families with children. Has there been any unexpected challenges security-wise with the bridge shelter?
So that's a great question, and actually that's one of the things that I think we can say the bridge shelters are doing incredibly well. So these are large shelters, 150, 200, 324 people, the three different shelters, and we have had minimal issues across the board. When you go down there, it feels more like a campus than it does sort of chaos, which you think it might be with 324 people in an environment. So I would say that what the operators are doing really well is providing strong emergency shelter services. It's the higher level support that we need to give them the resources to have. When we talk about security, those two security guards are really actually for the Veterans Village of San Diego site. That Midway District has a lot of need. And the idea is that these security guards are actually going to work with San Diego Police Department to help provide security outside of the site. So the shelter environments are very secure. I would say if anything related to families with children, it's usually the children arguing with each other for the most part.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hubbard.
Hi. As in regards to the 50 extra beds being provided for the Veterans Village, are they going to be for single adults? And I'm assuming they're going to be for single adults. And that was the question, sorry.
Yes, so the Veterans Village of San Diego site is for single adults, but both male and female. So they scale the number of beds for female to male depending on the number of need. So if they have females presenting that are in need, they'll increase the number of beds for females based on the bed availability, but it would be for single adults.
Thank you. And what was the reasoning behind adding 50 beds for non-veterans versus veterans, keeping it all veterans?
So from what we've seen for the VBSD shelter over the last several months is that they're operating at about 90% to 95% of capacity, sometimes dropping as low as 87%, 85%, depending on the time of the month and when veterans are coming in and out. We know that there's a great need for more than just veterans as far as emergency shelter bed goes. So this is an opportunity. If veterans are in need and appropriate, we won't not allow those beds to be opened up to veterans, but we just want to create some flexibility.
Okay, that makes plenty of sense. Any other questions? I'm going to move on to speakers. Keely Halsey of the mayor's office is, I believe, still here. Wonderful. Keely, you've got 2 minutes.
Got it. Thank you. Good morning. I'm Keely Halsey, and I'm here on behalf of Mayor Kevin Faulkner. I serve as his Chief of Homelessness Strategies and Housing Liaison for the city. I work very closely with this team here and Mr. Gentry on the issues you're discussing today, among others that come forward, come before you for consideration. The mayor asks for your support to recommend this item and move it forward toward for housing authority approval. As we discuss the issue today, we have our bridge shelters are serving as a safe haven for nearly 700 of the city's most vulnerable citizens. And as you've heard in the comprehensive presentation before you today, they've touched the lives of more than 2,500 individuals. And when we initiated this program, it was just under a year ago, and it was the first of its kind in San Diego, and we have learned a lot during that time. We've learned a lot about our unique population and its needs, and we've learned a lot about the strengths and gaps in our system. The contract presented for your consideration today includes many improvements detailed in the report you just heard, and it also provides some flexibility for additional adaptations as we learn and grow. And I am here to let you know that the mayor intends to stay active in the success of this program. He believes very strongly that it has served a good purpose to date, but that it could continue to do more. And so I personally will be involved. I work very closely with the staff and just very much appreciate the leadership of this commission on the issue. As you mentioned, Commissioner, and Mr. Gentry, you touched upon the issue of homelessness services and programming wasn't always in the purview of this commission and this board, and so we very much appreciate your partnership. And then I'd like to follow up just briefly, it wasn't part of my planned comments, but on your question, Commissioner, the city had planned with the CDBG money to provide in the ballpark of approximately $3 million, and instead we changed that allocation to $13
million. Thank you, and thank you for being here today. Okay, with that, any final thoughts? Is there a motion? Moved by Commissioner Klempner, seconded by Commissioner Davis. All in favor? Okay, and then opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay, now on to a workshop for the strategic plan. Wonderfully timed.
Good morning, Jeff Davis. Presenting our strategic plan update this morning will be Suket Dayal, our Senior Vice President of Business Administration, and Rachel Kiefer from our Project Management Office. We're pleased to share with you highlights of many of the Housing Commission's accomplishments towards achieving the goal and objectives of our agency-wide four-year strategic plan. This is our second annual presentation of the progress. The board approved this strategic plan a little more than 2 years ago on September 9th, 2016, and our first update was last year on September 8th. The board's strategic plan committee has provided essential guidance and direction for the development and implementation of this plan. We would like to thank former Commissioner Ben Moraga, who chaired the committee, former Commissioners Gary Gramling and Bobby Spoon, who served on the committee, and current chairman of the board, Frank Ertassin, and Commissioner Keeley Hubbard, who also served as committee members. Thank you very much for your leadership on this. So we do want to keep in mind that our strategic plan was deliberately created as a living document that could be updated as needed. With a new addition of new commissioners and new committee members, as well as potential adjustments to our programs and agency priorities, the opportunity exists to reevaluate and reshape the strategic plan moving forward. We as staff look forward to working closely with the strategic plan committee members upcoming. And before Suket begins the presentation, I'd also like to thank the Housing Commission staff. We have a really special group of people working here at the agency who are highly committed and dedicated to the work that we do. And we would like to especially thank them for the efforts that they did to cause the accomplishments you're about to hear to be realized. Thank you.
Good morning. Couldn't time this any better. So our strategic plan provides us a framework to have the greatest impact with limited resources to increase affordable housing opportunities. As you can see, there are three goals that we identified, and they focus on efficiencies, opportunity for our clients, and advocacy. Each slide, just a quick setup, each slide in our presentation will talk about a goal and the corresponding objective. I will cover the first goal. Rachel will cover the next two goals and the objectives. We are an overzealous bunch. There's a lot that we've accomplished, but we promise we'll limit it to we'll try to limit it to two highlights per slide. So our first goal was to maximize resources through operational efficiencies and technological innovations. And this objective focuses on customer service. And one of the first areas we decided to focus on was our website. Our website is often the first thing that our families, when they're looking for us, when they need some information, that's the first place that they go. We wanted to make our website user-first, focused on user-first. It needed a good overhaul. It hadn't been updated for the past 10 years. So the redesigned website was launched on July 2nd. It is easy to navigate. It's visually appealing. It's responsive on multiple devices. And again, communicating our mission clearly. We also created dashboards on our website. And these are informational snapshots, enhancing our transparency as a government agency. Another exciting project that Rick talked about was our new vendor portal, which was launched by procurement and IT. It was launched earlier this year. We have nearly 1,000 registered vendors already on that portal, and it allows vendors to electronically view and respond to bids. There are other enhancements that are part of the portal, like updating insurance certificates. And last week, we launched a feature that enables vendors to submit applications to pre-qualify for construction bids, which saves time for both the vendors and staff. There are additional portals in the work, and we'll keep you updated as they progress. Next objective, again, same goal, next objective, was really taking a look at our agency and focusing on where can we increase efficiencies. Now, last year, our rental assistance division underwent some changes. They did a Kaizen workshop. Kaizen is the Japanese philosophy of continuous improvement. And they focused on two areas, leasing and occupancy. They mapped out the whole process. The entire team was involved, and their efforts have led to savings of approximately 26% in leasing and 27%. In occupancy processes. Another highlight of under this objective was streamlining our internal administrative processes for NEPA, which is National Environment Policy Act. Now, this was accomplished by working closely with Chuck's office and a great collaboration with the city staff to really streamline the process internally. Coming soon, we have our Business Administration Division and our Homeless Innovations team also working on processes, again, evaluating the changes to see what we can do with. This objective was led by our human resources team, and it was focused internally to empower our residents, empower our team. Our career development plan supports business continuity and personal growth of Housing Commission employees. This includes a new employee online training and professional development learning management system. We also initiated a process for employees and their supervisors to engage in direct career conversations. Building on that process, we established a mentor program, and that's the picture out there just shows our mentor program. We have around 10 mentees that are paired with mentors from different departments. So our mentors get a chance to identify and develop their talents, learn more about the agency, and grow professionally. We will be evaluating the results of the program. This, again, just started, and we look to further expansion in the coming years. The next two objectives that we're going to talk about, they kind of address the long-term underfunding of capital funds by HUD. There was a study that was done in 2010. That showed that there was $26 billion with a B dollars of unmet capital needs nationally. And since 2010, HUD has not provided adequate funding, so continues to underfund this. So the situation just gets worse. As an agency, capital improvements, we believe, are essential to the long-term viability of affordable housing units. And in 2017, fiscal year 2017 and 2018, we've invested more than $40 million towards capital improvements for our properties. Now, these efforts are by our asset management team. They're impacted about 4,700 residents. There's a whole lot of numbers. I'm going to share some real quick. 22 properties have been painted, over 4,000 windows replaced, roofs have been changed, 1,500 cabinet replacements. There's fencing. We have a quick video, I think, that shows best the impact. So I do want to point out there is, unfortunately, nationally, there's a stigma associated with affordable housing. It's normally, there's a lot of neglect, there's a lot of decay. As you can clearly see, our units, they compete, if not they're better than the market rate units that we have in the neighborhood. For 2019, our fiscal plan approved a $21 million budget. That also, again, is going to address the green physical needs assessment. And one of the actions that you approved today morning, the La Jolla Marine, presented by Tom and Mike, is one of such action on that. On a long-term basis, we're also looking at, from a long-term perspective, to plan for capital improvements. And this, again, is for the needs that are current and the needs that are going to come. An initial draft of the long-term capital plan has been completed this year. We wear many hats, and one of the hats is that of being a landlord. And our occupancy rate is consistently 99 to 98%. So our property management team's objective was to reduce the average number of days that our units stay vacant. These are only the turn time that happens when one person leaves and another family comes in. Over the last year, they worked across the agency, across departmental effort. They've implemented standards, metrics in preparing the unit ready and make it into move-in ready condition. We're pleased to announce that through their efforts, they have decreased the average number of days by 50%. Every day that we reduce it, that means another family that could be a homeless family on the street or an affordable family or a family that needs affordable housing but is not in a good situation gets to move into our units. And with that, I'll turn it over to Rachel.
Thank you. The second major goal of our strategic plan is to increase housing opportunities for the families the Housing Commission serves. The Housing Commission set the objective to create 2,000 units of mixed income and affordable housing over the 4 years of our strategic plan. The developments and real estate transactions the Board has approved over the first 2 years of the strategic plan will create 2,925 units, including manager's units, when they are completed. This includes rental housing units that provide permanent supportive housing for San Diegans experiencing homelessness and transit-oriented development. In the first 2 years of the strategic plan, 557 units have been completed. Federal Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Rental Assistance, the Housing Commission's largest program, also provides essential housing opportunities for low-income families. We set an ambitious objective to achieve a voucher utilization rate of 102%, which we were able to attain among several quarters. Throughout fiscal year 2017 and fiscal year 2018, the combined average lease rate was 101%. This continues to surpass the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development standards. Over the next year, the Housing Commission plans to expand housing choices for rental assistance participants by increasing payment standards again. In addition, the Housing Commission will be contracting with a consultant to commence education and outreach activities related to the City of San Diego's recently amended Source of Income Ordinance by December of this year. The Housing Commission will also establish a contingency fund to help landlords cover expenses, such as repairs that exceed security deposits. These actions will increase the number of housing opportunities available to our rental assistance participants. Part of the Housing Commission's mission is to provide opportunities to improve the quality of life for the families that the Housing Commission serves. Among these opportunities are the programs of the SEHC Achievement Academy, which emphasize career planning, job skills, job placement, and personal financial education. As of the end of fiscal year 2018, the overall average hourly income of SEHC Achievement Academy participants increased approximately 14%. The SEHC Achievement Academy's Power of One program assists single-parent households. Of the 49 participants in the second year of the program, which commemorated its graduation in July, 77% increased their income. The Power of One program also received an award of merit this year from the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. The SEHC Achievement Academy is a key partner in the San Diego Envision Center that is expected to open later this year. HUD selected a partnership of the Housing Commission, City of San Diego, and San Diego Workforce Partnership to be one of only 18 Envision Centers in 17 communities across the country. Envision Centers promote financial self-reliance among federal rental assistance participants and public housing residents. When the strategic plan was developed and approved, our next objective was to create housing opportunities for 350 additional households through rapid rehousing and new permanent supportive housing. Subsequently, the Housing Commission created and launched the current phase of Housing for San Diego, our homelessness action plan. Housing for San Diego will create housing opportunities for at least 3,000 San Diegans experiencing homelessness over 3 fiscal years, 2018-2020. In the first year, fiscal year 2018, Housing for San Diego created more than 2,000 housing opportunities through 6 programs. These include rapid rehousing and permanent supportive housing, which make up the original strategic plan objective. In fiscal year 2018, our Moving Home Rapid Rehousing program housed 171 households experiencing homelessness. And through development funds awarded by the Housing Commission, as well as property acquisitions, 230 new units of permanent supportive housing are pending completion. The strategic plan's third major goal is to advocate for effective, affordable housing policies and resources. In the first 2 years of the strategic plan, our CEO, Mr. Gentry, has testified twice before congressional subcommittees and participated twice in congressional staff briefings. In addition, he was one of only 7 Housing Authority executive directors in the nation to be invited to participate in the National Housing Forum convened by the Congressional Hispanic Caucus last year. At the state level, the Housing Commission has supported important legislation for the creation and preservation of affordable rental housing. For example, the Housing Commission and the City of San Diego worked together with California State Assembly Member Todd Gloria and AB 1637. Signed into law last October, this legislation allows the Housing Commission to make loans to developers of mixed-income developments if 40% of the units are affordable to low-income households and at least 10% of the units are affordable to middle-income households. In addition, Mr. Gentry joined City Council Member Chris Ward and County Supervisor Ron Roberts to co-author a commentary in support of SB2 and SB3, which was published by Voice of San Diego. SB2 created an ongoing source of funds for the development of affordable rental housing, and SB3 placed a housing bond in the statewide ballot this November. And in April, Mr. Gentry and Mayor Kevin Faulkner co-authored a commentary published by the San Diego Union Tribune in support of AB 3171. Which would have directed $1.5 billion in state resources to address homelessness throughout the state. During the state budget process, the state directed $500 million to address homelessness. The Housing Commission also collaborates with city council members and officials on policy decisions at the local level. In fiscal year 2018, the Housing Commission collaborated with council members Scott Sherman and David Alvarez to develop the report Addressing the Housing Affordability Crisis, San Diego Housing Production Objectives 2018 to 2028. This report identified the City of San Diego's need for 150,000 to 220,000 housing units over the next 10 years, as well as proposals with the potential to create those units if implemented. This report was the next step in a process that started when the Housing Commission published its report, Addressing the Housing Affordability Crisis, an Action Plan for San Diego, which included 11 recommended actions to reduce costs and increase housing production. The Housing Commission released a 2018 status report in February to update the actions that have been taken on all 11 recommendations in the original report. In addition, our CEO joined Councilmember Georgette Gomez at a news conference in support of the amendments to the city's Source of Income Ordinance, which the City Council passed later that afternoon. and the Housing Commission is working with stakeholders and council members on updates to the city's inclusionary housing ordinance. Our next objective is to expand private and government funding sources to support Housing Commission programs. The Housing Commission has established a nonprofit affiliate with detailed processes and workflows that enabled it to receive its first approved grant this year. Throughout fiscal years 2017 and 2018, the Housing Commission also was awarded $1.6 million in new grant funding and other awards received from a combination of sources, such as State Farm Good Neighbor Citizenship Company Award, California Department of Water Resources, and U.S. Bank Foundation. Due to changes in funding priorities, the Transit-Oriented Development Fund was delayed and $10 million was not allocated in fiscal year 2018. These funds have been included as a funding source for notices of funding availability that the Housing Commission announced on September 4, 2018, for the development of permanent supportive housing and affordable rental housing. This approach creates the opportunity to expedite the development of the projects in the pipeline for construction that need gap financing. The Housing Commission continues to work with the city and additional partners in efforts to foster the creation of transit-oriented development, which include the potential implementation of a TOD fund in the future. In addition, we are working with the County of San Diego on the administration of No Place Like Home, which could provide an estimated $140 million to assist the San Diego region in preventing and addressing homelessness through the construction and rehabilitation of permanent supportive housing for individuals with mental illness who are experiencing homelessness. Partnerships are crucial to addressing homelessness in the city of San Diego, which involves a diverse population with differing needs. Our strategic plan includes an objective to collaborate with partners to assist additional homeless population groups. Through collaboration with the County Department of Child Welfare Services, the Bringing Families Home program was established. This program unifies families by providing access to affordable housing and supportive services through the referrals from the Coordinated Entry System. The Housing Commission also worked with Father Joe's Villages, Home Start, and South Bay Community Services to institute a program that provides rapid rehousing assistance to transitional age youth who are ages 18 to 24. Transitional age youth reside in 8 of the units at the Hotel Churchill, which we renovated to create permanent supportive housing units, and the Housing Commission will set aside units for this population group at Quality Inn over the next year.
This concludes our presentation. We'd like to welcome the new commissioner and congratulations for the new committee-appointed members. We look forward to working with you. We look forward to your guidance. We have the entire team here to answer any questions. That picture was taken at our last all-employee meeting. It was a crossword challenge that we did on the strategic plan, and we are a competitive bunch.
I'm glad you are finding ways to have fun with this. That's fantastic. Questions, fellow commissioners?
I just think it's a wonderful, you all are doing a wonderful job with everything, being a part, having been a part of the strategic planning committee and being a part of the planning and everything, seeing everything realized, it's wonderful, it's humbling, and seeing the report is great. You guys are doing a great job, so I just wanted to say that.
Great comments. Any other? Thank you very much. And our next report, we have a few informational reports now. Wait, do we have to adjourn? Do we do anything special? Oh, okay. I was thinking Chair Hurtasson is going to be very displeased with how long I've made this go. Do any of the commissioners have any questions on the informational reports that have been provided? Thank you. With that, I thought we were going to have Debbie present something, but Debbie, please come up and awkwardly sit so that we can shower you with praise. As you all know, this is Debbie's last formal meeting with us, although we do have you on contract as a consultant for a little longer, I believe, in case we need your expertise. No? This is
We're actually working through that. Mr. Gentry and I had lunch yesterday, and I have the opportunity to start some projects out there, and it's important that I make Mr. Christensen happy and make sure I don't violate the cooling off period. My intent is to get back into San Diego as quickly as I can so I can continue working here. So October 1 will be my official day as a lone wolf.
Wow. I've only had the opportunity to work with you for a little over a year that we've been doing this, and your expertise, your professionalism, your grace, particularly your grace under fire of late, is something that will be sorely missed, although you will be, your vacancy will be filled by some very wonderful people, and we look forward to working with you. It's just, you are an irreplaceable asset to this effort, to the mission, and I think to the city. So while I am devastated that you insist on leaving, I can say with complete confidence that the projects that you will now be serving will be very well served by you. And I can't wait to see what the future holds. And I look forward to finding new ways to work with you in the future. So I'm sure that Rick has comments he'd like to share, and I'll turn it over to him before letting the other commissioners embarrass you if they feel
that. I've actually asked people to be as brief as they can because my whole team knows I'm super emotional. And I do not enjoy crying.
No, I've already reduced her to tears before on any number of occasions. I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to miss you. Miss you terribly.
Just to echo the vice chair's comments, I anticipated a great many things, and we talked at length when we started this board. I did not anticipate how blue chip and high quality the staff would be here. That's been apparent and a great surprise. So we're talking about you right now. They are remarkable, but no, it's sincerely how blue chip the team is, and that comes from great leadership. And so it's been just an honor and a pleasure. We wish you all the best, and we're glad you're not going too far.
I got to say one thing. When I was hired 10 years ago, it was with the expressed purpose of turning this place around. This was never a terrible organization, but it was pretty typical government. And one of the first people that I hired was this lady. And this was the pure private sector type that helped us establish some standards. Going to miss you.
I want to say you're in excellent hands. The team, the leadership here, amazing.
Can't just let it end on that. I cry when other people cry. This is going to get real bad. Let's give Debbie a round of applause. Thank you. Before anyone else starts to cry, we are adjourned.